Great to have you along today. As we turn our attention to stroke, if you've suffered a stroke, I know the experience is very scary. Often you're unable to communicate your distress, let alone identify the cause. And that's why I think it's important for people to be able to identify the symptoms and seek medical help immediately. And I'm Larry Mueller, by the way, and we'll be talking about that today with Dr. Diane Book. Dr. Book is a neurologist specialist in cerebrovascular disorders, including stroke, and a co-founder of the Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin Stroke Program. It's great to have her with us. And as we talk, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've suffered a stroke, or maybe you know someone who has. I know I have a couple of them. I have a very good friend who had a stroke. My dad had a stroke. It's out there, and most of us know somebody who's had to go through this. Give a call, though, with your own experience at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Dr. Diane Book, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Larry. Super happy to be here. I really love talking about stroke and educating people.
Let's start with a definition. What is a stroke?
Oh, so a stroke technically is the injury in the brain, a small area usually where blood flow has been lost and the brain cells die. So the brain injury is what we call the stroke.
The brain injury. And there are different types of strokes, as I understand it?
Positively. So there's two main categories of stroke. There's the most common, and it's the type of stroke we're usually referring to, because it's 80 to 90% of all strokes are an ischemic stroke. So that's the word that means lack of oxygen. So that's when there's a small blood vessel in the brain that is blocked, clogged, or occluded, and the patch of brain supplied by that artery, we're talking arteries usually, dies. And that's an ischemic stroke, the most common kind of stroke. The other kind of stroke, less common but a little more dangerous, is a bleeding stroke or a hemorrhagic stroke, where the blood vessel, the artery, breaks open and leaks blood as opposed to having a clog. So an analogy I think that we'll probably come back to a few times here is to use a plumbing analogy. So we're talking about plumbing to the brain, so supply of blood and oxygen in the blood. And your pipes, of course, do that in your house, delivering water, and you can have a clog in the pipe and no water gets through. That's ischemic. And you can have a broken pipe or water spills everywhere, and that's a hemorrhage.
Oh, man. You don't want either one, but I guess
no, of course. Yeah.
If you're going to have one, the ischemic sounds like the preferred version of a stroke to have.
Yeah, there's problems with each of them that are slightly different, but hard to argue that a hemorrhage is favorable. Yeah, hemorrhages are harder to treat. There are fewer treatment options. So,
my dad had a stroke on the golf course. It was an ischemic stroke, I believe, and he lost his voice for a while.
Oh, like slurred speech or couldn't make sound at all?
Well, very slurred.
Yes.
And that was, and he, over time, he liked to fish, and he'd go out on his boat by himself, muskie fishing, and he would work on his voicing because
he
think he would have been embarrassed to be trying that sort of thing around everybody. And of course, mother would jump in the boat with him too. And
yeah.
And
so that's a super common phenomenon is, you know, people are, they have pride and you've lost some ability in a stroke and people don't like to either share that or manifest that. But we'll probably get to talking about recovery after stroke. And the best thing you can do is challenge yourself to be out there and doing the thing that's hardest for you. Because the more you do, the faster you do it, the sooner that is after a stroke, the more you're going to get back. So I would be counseling your dad. He's got to get out in public and talk.
Yeah. Well, he did. He was able to, I mean, he's still at a little, you know, his wasn't quite the same as his old self, but pretty close. But
good.
That's one effect. I mean, there are other long and short-term effects of strokes we could talk about.
Right. And recognizing stroke, and there's this acronym that's very popular and we strongly promote it called BFAST. Because it talks about what are common signs of stroke, and also then those are going to be the common effects of a stroke. So if we want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, let's do that.
So it's BEFAST, BFAST, which stands for the most common impacts of a stroke. Now, a little guidance. So a stroke can hit any part of the brain. And most strokes hit one part of the brain at a time. So one stroke is one patch of brain that's damaged. So the specific symptoms, like your dad's slurred speech, completely depend on where in the brain the stroke occurred. So every stroke is different. And any particular neurologic deficit is possible in a stroke. The BFAST guide is the most common things that happen in a stroke, but many other things can happen. So the B stands for sudden loss of balance. The A stands for sudden eye problems, E for eye, as in a vision change. It can be loss of vision in one eye, or loss of vision to one side. F is for facial droop. A is for arm weakness. S is for speech difficulty, which it sounds like your dad may have experienced. And T stands for time. You got to act fast, call 911, and get yourself to an emergency room. And in the newest iteration of this, T also stands for terrible headache, which is a common feature of that less common hemorrhagic stroke. So the ischemic strokes, again, that's 85% of strokes, do not cause pain. So headache is not a typical feature of an ischemic stroke, which in my career I've found to be a tragedy because it doesn't hurt. People don't act as quickly. And the analogy is heart attack. Heart attack is the same problem, but in the heart. A patch of heart muscle loses its blood supply, causes exquisite pain, you know, the pain of angina, chest pain, heart attack. And then people get themselves to care because it hurts. And stroke usually doesn't hurt, which is one of the reasons people delay. But the hemorrhage strokes do hurt. So that's a terrible headache.
Yeah. The foursome behind my dad in the golf course, one of them was a physician and ran right up there and and my dad was in an ambulance and out the door off the course in pretty very quick time.
Excellent. That's what needs to happen. As when we get into treatments, you'll all hear me repeat that the faster we can get to that ischemic stroke and restore blood flow before those brain cells have died, that's really what we're trying to do is reverse the stroke process, the more recovery you'll have. And we're talking minutes. I mean, millions of brain cells die every minute that the blood flow is reduced. So we got to get to you very quickly. So he did the right. He and his golf group did the right thing.
Cheryl in Iron Ridge, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Well, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for my wonderful husband, who unfortunately died in 2024 of melanoma. But we were camping in Texas in our motorhome. I was cooking dinner and, of course, talking. And my husband, you know how when somebody gets put to sleep, you really don't know you're getting put to sleep till you wake up and realize the procedure is over?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that at that point I was slurring my words while I was cooking at the stove in our motorhome. My husband called the EMTs in our little town where we camped on our friend's ranch. And by the time the guys got there, I didn't know I had a stroke. I said, why are the EMTs here? And my husband looked at me and he said, you were having a stroke. And I said, no, wait a minute. I was cooking. I wasn't having a stroke. And sure enough, I had had a mini stroke because later in life, when I acquired AFib, they did all the tests, and Dr. Berger from Fratert is my doctor. They found I had a stroke back then, but I didn't know I had a stroke.
Yeah. Very interesting. Dr. Buck, comment.
So that story is so common. If I had a nickel for every time I've heard a story like that, I'd be rich. So several key things you point out, and thanks for calling. Sounds like your speech is very normal, so I'm really glad you had a great recovery. But yeah, you had a speech problem, you know, the S of the B fast, like Larry's dad. And you bring up an important point. A person having a stroke sometimes, not always, but sometimes is not aware of the problem. And part of that is because we're talking about a brain injury, and your brain may not be processing your insight properly. So the person who has a stroke isn't always aware they're having the stroke. It depends where in the brain the injury is happening. And then the second thing is they discovered in your evaluation, I presume, the AFib. Or maybe that was later. I couldn't quite follow the timeline. But AFib is a common cause of stroke, particularly in older people who are more prone to stroke. And most persons who present with AFib don't know that they've had it. So atrial fibrillation is an irregular heartbeat, doesn't necessarily cause any overt symptoms. You might not have palpitations, you might not have chest pain, you might not have anything wrong with you until you have a stroke because of the irregular heartbeat in the heart, which allows a little clot to form and then get kicked out into the brain. So when someone comes in with a stroke, there's a whole variety of tests we do to determine the specific cause, and we're always looking for AFib. So I'm glad they found your AFib, and I'm glad you've recovered from your stroke.
I am as well, Cheryl. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. Robert in Amherst Junction, your turn. Hi, Robert.
Hi there. Well, a couple interesting kind of funny things happened when I had a stroke. One is that I came in the house really confused, and I described my symptoms, and my son was in high school at the time. Sitting on the couch with his computer, he said, he's having a stroke. Get him in the emergency room. Because he had some program at the high school where they told him what the symptoms were. But then when I got to the hospital, there was a question of whether or not they could administer the clot buster medication. Because you have to do it within a certain amount of time. And I didn't know what time it was when I had the stroke out in the shop. But I said, click and clack, the Tappet Brothers had just come on the radio. And so they looked up the time and discovered that, I was under the threshold where I could get the medication.
So a public radio and connection.
So, right. Thanks to public radio.
That's a great story. That is a great story. And, you know, you remind me to mention that last letter in the Be Fast time. It also means that specific time when your symptoms start is critical. We need to know exactly when the clock started on that potential stroke because, yes, the clot-busting drug we give, it's now called TNK or tenecteplase. We have to give it under a certain time window. It's 4.5 hours in most people. And if we don't know the time and if it's possible that the time was longer than that 4.5 hours, we cannot give it. So like if somebody wakes up in the morning with the symptoms and they went to bed at 10 o'clock the night before, we can't give it because we can't be sure they didn't have it all night. And in your case, there were clues. So we are always probing and probing for, well, what were you doing? What was happening? When do you have your lunch? When do you go in the shop? And right, if you listen to a show, that's time-stamped. So we know that at least at that point, we can start figuring out the clock. So we're always digging like detectives in the heat of the moment in the emergency room to figure that out.
So if, and Robert, thanks so much for calling. I very much appreciate that call. So if you don't know the time, then what's the alternative in terms of care from your point of view?
So if we don't know the time and if the last, so we look for when were you last known to be well. The last known well time is the time we have to use. So let's say Robert says, well, I went into my shop, but I don't know when this started, but I talked to my wife in the morning during breakfast, so we have to use that as the start time. And if the start time is beyond 4.5 hours, we have to look to other more aggressive options than the clot-busting drug. But really, we'd like to be able to give that clot-busting drug to every stroke patient, ischemic stroke, because it's quick, it's easy, it's just a IV push in the emergency room, and it's highly effective. If it's beyond the 4.5 hours, the other options we have are, catheter-based treatments where we go in with a little wire into the artery in the groin or the arm, and we feed that wire up to the brain. And we find the clot directly, and we drip medicine or we pull it out with a little bit of plumbing tools to do what's called thrombectomy. That's much more complicated, much more risky, but we can do that out to even 24 hours.
An emailer wonders, can signs of stroke differ between men and women? This person has heard that signs for women aren't as talked about, so many women wait longer to get treated.
So heart attack symptoms vary greatly between women and men. That's the newer data in the last few years that's been very revealing. Stroke is not quite so gender unique. So we're talking small areas in the brain. The brain works similarly, you know, in most humans. So we don't really see dramatic differences between men and women in how stroke symptoms present.
If somebody has had a stroke, are they at a greater risk of having another one?
Yeah, so the answer is yes. So, I mean, imagine a stroke is really a manifestation in most cases of some kind of plumbing problem. Your pipes are damaged, getting plaque and build up and clogged, or you have a problem with your water, your blood, meaning a clotting disorder, that's rare, or you form clots in the heart. So those problems are all things that can't be cured per se. They can be treated and managed, but not cured. So yes, you always have a risk for another stroke, and about a third of all stroke patients go on to have another stroke. So really most of the care I have to deliver in a hospital or in the clinic
when I meet a person who's had a stroke is helping figure out what are the specific things we can do to prevent a second stroke.
Yeah. And what are some things that we can do to prevent that second stroke?
So it's all related to keeping your plumbing clean. So there'll be medications prescribed for preventing certain varieties of blood thinners, aspirin being the most common thing we'll use. But in every person, and this is whether you've had a stroke or have never had a stroke, so hopefully most of the people listening have never had a stroke, you want to, you know, be an active participant in keeping your body healthy, which means keeping blood pressure low, keeping blood sugar low, keeping weight low, keeping cholesterol down, not smoking, and being physically active. Those are all things that prevent a stroke in the first place and will secondarily reduce your risk of a future stroke if those things haven't been already in check. But medications are also used as blood thinners. We'll treat cholesterol. We'll treat diabetes and high blood pressure quite aggressively. And then in some cases, we have to treat concurrent heart disease if that was the root cause of the stroke, like our caller who had atrial fibrillation.
And I have the friend I had that had AFib, and that was the reason for his stroke, which he's completely recovered from many years back already. But still, that's in the background for sure, for sure. What's a stroke center certification? What is that, and who should get it?
Oh, hospitals can apply for certification by the Joint Commission, which is a federal agency, but there are other organizations who certify hospitals. And that's a long process of basically proving that you have all the right elements of care at your institution and meet certain standards of quality to deliver stroke care. It initially came out when the clot-busting drug TPA first came out, which was in the late 90s. And we wanted patients to know which hospital has this drug, which hospital can safely deliver this drug. So they started certifying hospitals as being basically competent to deliver this drug. So ambulances would know which hospitals to take a stroke patient to and maybe which hospitals should be bypassed because the patient's not going to get this emergency care. It's a lot like, you know, by analogy, the certification of trauma centers. So a stroke center that's certified has proven and has a track record of being able to deliver the full complement of care options and to do so with high quality.
Which Frater has?
All the Fraterts that are full hospitals, so Maine, Fratert, Fratert West Bend, Fratert, Menominee Falls are all the highest level of certification, which is referred to as a comprehensive stroke center, which means we can do all the types of treatment I've mentioned, the clot-busting drugs and the more aggressive thrombectomy treatments.
Wow. A good place to go if you're in that situation, for sure. Where do people go for more information about strokes and stroke recovery?
So there's lots of resources out there. I would say the American Heart Association and a subdivision of that, American Stroke Association, is a fantastic resource for patients, for caregivers, and for health professionals. And then the National Stroke Association is another similar organization. And then in the hospitals themselves put out a lot of information. The Fraterte.org website has a whole series of, I guess you'd call them pages, that cover stroke care and stroke recovery.
All good information, and you mentioned the American Heart Association. That's a simple one, too. It's just stroke.org, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Stroke.org.
Well,
I go there often.
Well, Dr. Book, it has been a great pleasure talking with you. I hope, well, I probably won't be able to talk with you again because I'll be retiring in June, but Lee Rayburn, who's taken over for me, I'm sure is going to want to talk with you again. Thank you so much for being with us, and look forward to another visit from you. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Larry, and to your great callers.
Dr. Diane Book, co-founder of the Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin Stroke Program, specialist in cerebrovascular disorders. Coming up, Dr. Zorba Pastor for the next hour. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.